Hey, listeners, let's take a moment for a shout out to our sponsor, Squarespace. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for creators to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create an awesome website, connect with your audience, and sell anything all in one place, all on your terms. Even if you don't know where to start with creating a website, Squarespace has you covered with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally created layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people. Flexible payment options make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So, ready to get started? Head over to squarespace.com/gamescoop for a free trial. And when it's showtime, use our special promo code GAMESCOOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, let's dive back into GameScoop. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by 4hymns.com. Come get up. See where I live. IGN GameScoop. I want to take it away. So, what's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Justin Davis. Oop. Making her first appearance on GameScoop is Cindy Goodman, new host for us, who's working out of our LA office. That's and me. Visiting up in the SF office.
So we all came
down
to LA to do this.
So we've come down to LA to shoot GameScoop. Good thing we brought our shorts and sunglasses. Let's get changed, everybody. And Sam Claiborne is here this week. And we've got a great show for you. But we want to hear about Sydney a little bit. Sydney, what's your favorite game right now that you've been playing?
God of War.
God of War.
I'm trying to think of something a little bit more creative, having a really good time with it. I want to sink more hours. I'm not very far at all.
Okay.
And it's my first God of War ever, which is exciting. I really like it.
Have you? I mean, no spoilers, but have you gone through the portal where he wakes up in modern day yet?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Sorry. I said too much. It's okay. We'll edit that out.
He's just in New York City, like that episode of The Simpsons. Homer's in
like that airplane scene? Is that what you're talking about?
It's a real fish out of water game. And what's your favorite game of all time, Sydney?
Halo 3.
Halo 3.
Easy. But I will fully admit that Halo 2 is a better game. Except I was old enough at Halo 3 to get like really into the competitive multiplayer.
Sure.
Where Halo 2 was kind of just like flailing about.
Sure. Sam, I know you like the Halo games.
I do. And we were talking about this earlier. The Halo 3 has such a good campaign, and that's the last campaign you ever played.
It is. It's the last campaign I ever played. I wanted to end on a bang.
That's it. You retired.
I retired.
You know, it is probably wise, although there's been some moments since then. But you play multiplayer more than you
Yes. I still play Halo. I didn't play Halo 4, really. The multiplayer, I didn't really care for it. But Halo 5, I think, feels good.
Mm-hmm,
I actually still get on almost a weekly basis and play with my crew. It feels good. I really enjoy the multiplayer. But the campaign after three.
Have you ever played the campaign on Legendary with a friend?
I've tried.
Those are really fun. Four is really hard, but the ones before that, they're hard, but a lot more fun than that.
I think two is like the impossible one. You just like can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tapped out at one. When MCC came out, I had a friend, and this was in the multiplayer, like you couldn't really play it. So I was like, oh, we might as well let's try and speed run on Legendary through MCC. Wasn't very speedy.
Yeah.
Are you me? Because I did the exact same thing with Brian Albert. He's really good at Halo, and I'm fine. Like, I'm pretty bad. And I was just, I'm like, you just carry me. The way that it works in multiplayer is if one person's alive, the other person will respawn.
Yeah.
So my only job was to be like
a mobile. Not like Contra.
I was a mobile respawn point for Brian. He's like, just hide, and then I'll go in and kill everybody. And if I die, I'll come back where you are.
So funny.
Brian Albert?
Yeah. I was just cowering behind crates.
Do you get in vehicles in multiplayer ever?
Only if I have to.
See, the total difference. Like, that's the only thing I want to do in multiplayer, and I get killed immediately.
Oh, see, I mean, I keep it really basic. BR is my gun.
Battle rifle.
And I just don't really go for power weapons unless I have to, mm-hmm. like for map control, and usually I'll just drop it for a teammate.
Are you good with a Spartan laser?
No.
Have you ever seen people good with a Spartan? It's crazy.
Does that exist?
I was just going to say, is that a thing?
During the Halo, was it 3 when that came out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. People got really good at that. It was annoying.
That sounds really annoying. Yeah, I don't know. That's not my gun. I'm pretty bad
at sniping. What about sniper rifle?
Nope. I'm pretty bad. All across the board. I'm just bad at sniping.
All right.
Are you hopeful for a Halo 6 announcement at E3?
Yes.
It's time?
Yeah, it's time. Time is now.
E3 2018.
E3 2018.
And then Christmas 2018.
Well, so yeah. I was actually, everybody was asking me, well, no, nobody was asking me my E3 predictions, but I told them anyways.
Oh, we were just talking about it before the show.
The voice in your head.
Not predictions. That's
not
true.
Predictions, that's true. But I said,
nobody was
they're going to announce Halo 6 and be like, out November 2018. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen.
Like but, Fallout style.
Yeah, but if it did happen, then I would be correct and I'd be very happy. Mm-hmm. So.
Scoop.
That'd be really fun.
All right, we got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about Cyberpunk 2077. We're going to talk about those Mega Men. But first, Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. Got trailer number 3 this morning. Everyone got a chance to watch it?
I watched.
Yeah, I watched it twice.
Watched it a few times as well. What's give me your reactions. Give me your hot takes.
I wish I was more excited.
That's what I'm seeing in the comments on IGN today. Mm-hmm. People are a little disappointed that it didn't show gameplay.
That's what I wanted. Mm. Yep.
So disappointed or not excited because of the trailer or because of everything you've seen so far?
So I am not a huge Western person. Mm-hmm. I didn't play the first game. I had a lot of people that played it. I like saw the gameplay and I heard about Red Dead 2 coming out and Westworld kind of, I guess, pulled me into. I was like, okay, Western, yeah. I could be interested in this. And I think I need to see gameplay before I'm totally sold.
What if you have seen gameplay?
What if it has a Westworld style twist where then like someone wakes up out of the animus and they're like, I hope you enjoyed your Western adventure.
Totally.
I've secretly been working on some other game this whole time.
I mean, this could be, you know, just like really a game about relationships and talking and stuff like that.
But yeah, I mean, that's what this trailer was like, the story trailer.
Like Eleanor. Mm-hmm. I thought the last one was the story.
Yeah, they all have been.
But I think trailer 2, in my opinion, was a little bit more of like the mood. Like they had like scenes of like just wildlife and animals.
And what was the
like
first one?
Maybe that was the first one.
That was the first one.
Mm. Yeah. It went wildlife and then kind of overall theme. And this is more characters, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what I would call this, is like a character trailer.
So. But none of those things are like hunting mission.
No.
Nope. Yeah.
Yep. But you do see like a hawk flying around. You're like, okay, maybe I can shoot that for some points. So you guys were thinking
for things to shoot.
I actually did that exact thing. I was like trying to get
what
gameplay.
Can I shoot?
Like trying to derive. Like, what are you gonna do in this game?
Yeah, they did have the one hint. Oh, I'm trying to remember. There was one scene in the trailer where I'm like, that's totally like a gameplay, like a hunting mission or something.
Or like the heist in this one.
Yeah.
There's a couple shots. There's like where he tackles a guy like in a takedown move. There's a shot where he's like crawling through a burning building and the camera's right behind him that looks like, you know, a gameplay.
There's the training the horses or catching horses, lassoing horses part. But what I kept on wanting to do is stop and just look in the background. And like in some of those scenes, you see like a lake and then like a prairie for a little while and then like the mountains rising. It's like, if that's the open world, that is exciting. You know,
I did that
like,
that's really cool. With the town. Like I froze on the town and just looked at all the characters and NPCs and like, stuff, just the level of detail that was there in the little dusty Western town.
Yeah. It must be fun to make a world. It's like a little microcosm of you know, Western culture. And then they like kind of unleash that and say, film these scenes here and make a game out of it. It almost seems like it's world first. Like they had to build another reality and now they're actually figuring out what to do with it.
I think GTA 5
it's really
did
cool.
that, right?
Maybe, totally.
Maybe I made that up. No, I think they did the world, they built the world first and then just put missions inside it after.
Yeah. I think that's exactly, I mean, that's like us level design, right? Yeah. It's one level.
Is that what level design today is in an open world game?
I guess. Totally. Yeah.
just one giant level. Yeah, I was expecting to see gameplay today, but I do think like the mood, like the vibe that they're setting up seems cool.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Sydney, so you didn't play Red Dead Redemption. Did you play GTA 5?
I did, yes. Okay. And actually, that brings up, so watching this and what I was interested in seeing in the gameplay we didn't see was kind of the UI, how with GTA, you know, it seems really natural to be like, pop out my cell phone. Cool. Like, what is going to be that parallel?
Oh, I predicted in the last episode that there's just going to be cell phone cheats in this.
For no reason.
But telegram cheats.
I hope so.
The horse has a lot of, like, saddlebag area, and I just figure, like, you can keep your cell phone in there.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That's a good place for it.
Yeah, I don't know how they'll have... Well, how did I guess Red Dead just had game menus. It was more video gamey, right?
They didn't explain it. Complicated. Like, I love that game to death, but it was complicated to control, like being on a horse and shooting a gun and just like the variety of stuff that you kind of had to juggle. I remember my fingers kind of getting twisted up a little bit playing that game.
So. It's like in GTA when you're doing drive-by shootings or flying a helicopter, which is actually pretty tough. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot more controls than you're normally using. If you want to shoot at the side of your car while you're driving the car, there's not a whole lot of ways you can... You know, control that easily with the camera too.
Yeah. So Sam, you were a little bit disappointed with the exploration aspect of God of War. So what would Red Dead 2 have to do to sort of satisfy your desire to explore that world?
Yeah, I think I'm already seeing these kind of elements of like, I don't care what's going on in, you know, this scene right now. I just want to ride into into that storm on the horizon or something. Yeah. I want there always to be something that I know I can get to. But it's like, you know, like they can see on the horizon. The Witcher was really good at this. There was like a mountain range in the distance. And you could go to it at any time, but there'd be like a giant ogre up there that would kill you. You know, and that was the only thing really stopping you from exploring that area at the time. But there'd be like a rundown castle or something that you could see from the distance. I always like finding a landmark, saying like, that's what I want to do today is go explore that landmark. And I know in Western games, it's a little bit more mundane because it'll be like a cabin on a mountain or something. But I want them to be able to, I think there can be some really beautiful things to go explore, and I'm already seeing
could be Bigfoot up there.
Could be, yeah. And I think the Sasquatch moments in the last game were some of my favorite.
Oh, I remember now. The thing, sorry, no, I just couldn't remember the thing in the trailer that I'm like, that's clearly just a mission, was the boxing, the bare knuckle.
Oh, yeah, there's a, seems like maybe a mini game.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of mini games.
It's not an open world game if they don't have some sort of boxing something. Well, it's just like an easy side mission to add, right?
I didn't do a lot of boxing in Breath of the Wild.
I did it in Witcher. Think. It was very silly.
Yeah.
Liar's Dice, was that one of the mini games in the last one?
Yep.
Yeah, there's that like sounds always, right.
I didn't play many of those. Yeah. But I didn't play Gwent the whole time I played Witcher.
Dude.
I never put a card down in that game.
Oof.
Liar's Dice. Yeah. Well, you don't need to. You're not super into card games, right? So there's that.
They have poker in Red Dead, too.
Yeah.
So that's our third look at Red Dead. It's still got its release date. At least it didn't get delayed again. Still set for October 26th, I want to say.
I don't think it's going to move. I think this is it.
It's rooted in place. Yeah. It's standing there.
So.
They'll definitely, you know, there's several more like beats they can hit where they can show off more of the gameplay. Maybe it'll be at E3, maybe on Sony's stage because they do have like a marketing.
But by the time people are reading that, watching or listening to this tomorrow, we'll have tons of stuff about Red Dead.
Yeah, bright and early tomorrow morning. I think it's 7 a.m. Pacific. We've got a big blowout on Red Dead Redemption 2 going up on the sites.
And that'll be today for most of you. I think sometimes you get audio up early, but
audio will be up today. Yeah, video will be up tomorrow.
Thursday, May 3rd, we have a huge amount of actually exclusive stuff from Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah. Which should be a little bit more what maybe people were expecting.
Yeah, we've seen the game being played, but we're not going to see gameplay.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Speaking of The Witcher, we are now 99.99% sure that Cyberpunk 2077 will be at E3. This is because developer CD Projekt Red is coming to E3, and they say they're bringing an RPG.
Well, there you go. There you have it.
Unless there's some Witcher DLC forthcoming, it's definitely Cyberpunk.
Do you guys know anything about the Cyberpunk card game?
That's why I wanted to ask Justin, our resident tabletop gaming expert.
Wait, what's the question?
Do you know anything about the Cyberpunk tabletop game?
Yeah, it's called Cyberpunk 2020.
No, I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Cannot help you. No, I never.
I didn't realize this, but this game is based on a tabletop game.
Yeah, it's similar-ish to The Witcher in the sense that it's adapted from the subject,
the novels, right?
This, you know, this previous subject matter, you know, but it sort of eclipsed it and superseded it. Now Witcher as an identity as a video game franchise separate from these Polish novels. And the cyberpunk tabletop setting, I suspect that the video game will end up doing something similar, right? Like, it's going to leave a bigger footprint, if I were to guess.
Yeah.
Have there been other games that have been adapted from tabletop games?
Well, there's Shadowrun.
Shadowrun.
That's an obscure one. But, like, Magic has a version, you know?
But that's a little bit, they didn't adapt it into, like, a...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
An RPG.
Oh, no, you're right. The Shadowrun's a really good example.
You know, Dungeons & Dragons video games. It's been plenty of years. Dungeons & Dragons,
And then, like,
Pathfinder.
Is Neverwinter Nights, like, a Dungeons & Dragons-inspired video game, right? And that's a huge one.
And so those, like, run the gamut from, like, sometimes they just take, like, the setting. Like, we're going to make an action game, but set it in this Dungeons & Dragons world. But then other times it's much more, like... We're going to try to replicate that role-playing experience in digital form.
And then there's Mario Party.
Based on a tabletop game,
Based off Mario Monopoly.
Isn't it crazy that there is no Mario Party tabletop game?
I'd play that game.
I would play the heck out of that
game. It would have to have a lot of pieces.
Yes, exactly.
You have to have a lot of pieces.
And then at the end, you just roll the dice to see who wins. Yeah. Nothing else matters.
In the words of James Hetfield.
Cyberpunk is a long time coming, right?
Well, yeah.
Was it 2013?
2012, I think.
2012.
When it was announced?
I was in high school in 2012.
So it's going to, that means it's had a lot of time to become a really cool, fully really fun, cool game.
I mean, so Witcher 3 was a pretty big hit. I know you play a lot of that, Sam. Did you play Witcher 3?
I didn't. So that's part of the reason why I'm so excited for this is because I've heard only amazing things about Witcher 3. Obviously, they've done an incredible job, like you said, adapting something that's now recognized as more of a video game than anything.
Yeah.
So
and cyberpunk like culture is like a cool thing.
It's
totally like undertapped, right? Like we were also sad to see the Prey. Like they revealed that version of Prey that was very cyberpunky. Then canceled
exactly.
It. And the Prey we got was really cool as well, but you know that canceled the game.
But no mohawks.
Are you sure there's no mohawk in the game
in Prey?
Yeah, last year's Prey?
No, I'm not sure, but I did play a lot of it. And I didn't see one.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
But I think is Deus Ex, would you guys say, like the biggest cyberpunk series?
Yeah.
There's more that can be done there. Like we get a lot of fantasy games, obviously, and we get a lot of like GTA style games, but like and we even get like, you know, hard sci-fi like spaceships and stuff, but like cyberpunk and that sort of hacker culture is not really very explored in video games.
The funny thing about Shadowrun
does a good job with it.
Yeah. The funny thing about like those William Gibson books from the 80s, like Neuromancer or something, where it's all about like VR and it's about like living in a virtual space and having like the world be affected by that. So like if cyberpunk like actually worked that in, it'd be interesting. If there was like a light world, dark world, Zelda type thing, but one was the virtual world. I mean, Persona's kind of like that. But yeah, like if there's a whole, you know, the whole map, it's open world, and then there's also the map that's the virtual open world where you can fly or something, you know.
We, a video game journalism moment from my history that always makes me chuckle is I interviewed some of the executives from CD Projekt, I think 2 or 3 years ago.
About The Witcher?
I did the thing you always do where you slip in a question about cyberpunk. I said, what's going on with cyberpunk? And they said, you know, we're not really talking about cyberpunk right now. Like, you know, we're staffing up that team and we'll have more to say in a couple of years. And then I think my headline was like, CD Projekt executives talk cyberpunk. And the quote was like, we're staffing up that team.
Yeah.
Which is true. Nothing about that is untrue. But I still flash on that moment once in a while where it's like, you gotta be careful what you say.
It's true. So CD Projekt Red will be at E3. Cyberpunk is definitely a highly anticipated game. It will be at a press conference. Will be at Microsoft or Sony. The Witcher 3 was at Microsoft. So if history,
marketing relationship with that
game, I don't think they've announced it yet. If history tells us anything, I would guess it would be Microsoft.
I think Microsoft needs it. I mean, I think they need this definitely. Press conference to really.
That's
like,
why it'd be really mean for Sony to.
Surprise! We have Sony, Cyberpunk.
Do you think Sony think we should give this one to Microsoft?
just to keep things interesting. I think the Xbox One X is a considerably more powerful console than the PS4 Pro, and I have to assume that Cyberpunk will be a graphical powerhouse. So,
an example would be like Metro was on the Xbox. Showcase last year.
I can't recall. But so from CD Projekt's perspective, you know, I mean, it's a business decision, right? So that's what's mostly going to drive it. But in order for the game to make the best splash that it can in terms of, you know, running and just gorgeous 4K and yada, yada, you'd think it would probably be a little bit more likely to be on Microsoft stage.
Yeah. Well, we don't have too long to wait. You know, E3 is like a month and a few days.
No.
Nah, man. Away. Don't say that.
Yeah.
No, I'm excited. I'm just kidding.
I'm excited,
I'm excited.
I always get excited.
I'm not ready.
Yeah, those are two different things, I suppose.
Sydney, have you covered E3 before?
Not covered. I have always worked a booth.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I did GameSpot's booth, and last year there was a booth with Red Bull and ESA. And so I've been chained to the desk. Well, not really the desk, the podium.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get you out there. E3's I'm excited. Super fun show. I'm excited. Fun.
Very, very covering excited. It. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I had a lot of fun like calling people.
Yeah.
Oh, trying to get appointments.
Did you get to go to the Nintendo booth ever?
Yes. It's yeah. During my break. So it'd be like 20 minutes. Or, like,
yeah. It's always
fast run to the other side.
Is it going to be a Smash Brothers booth this year?
It's a good question.
I think so.
I don't think they're going to do the single really game like thing that. Anymore.
No, yeah, I would too. I think it's disappointing that there's not a Microsoft just direct booth in this year. It'll be off campus.
I really hope though that they're doing it because they're really going to do something cool
like
in the Microsoft Theater
room or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm really hoping that they did it not necessarily to showcase Mixer, but more because they were like, we have this really cool idea to utilize the theater. Which I don't think is the case, but it'd
that
be
is
cool
the
if
idea,
it was.
Right? They wanted to really play up Mixer,
yeah,
and that's in.
And so the Mixer booth, to my understanding, is where the Microsoft booth would be. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, like I said, I'm a month and a few days away. It's coming up soon. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Tim in Kentucky did. Tim Tucky, they call him. He says, I've been watching GameScoop for about 4 years now. It is by far my favorite games podcast. Last year, Capcom released a cartridge for Street Fighter for SNES, and now they are releasing Mega Man 2 and X, NES, and NES cartridges, irrespectively. While both consoles have been out of production for a while, there are companies making newer versions of them. Could we get to a point where companies will make more games for them because you have both the old consoles and the newer versions? This is said Street Fighter 2 cartridge.
Yeah.
And we don't know if it glows in the dark.
It does.
Oh, it does glow in the dark.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
We got one of the rare ones.
Some of the Mega Man ones will glow in the dark too.
Yes.
This is the glow in the dark.
So the Mega Man 2 is a light blue NES cart, and then the Mega Man X is a white Super Nintendo cart.
So it's the same. The Street Fighter 2 one is more of like a novelty. Like, doesn't it say don't put this in an SNES because it could get hot and blow up?
Yeah, they like can't guarantee you like it won't blow up.
In the original press release and the press materials, it said don't. It was like more like, yeah, like this. You risk hurting your old Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. By putting this in it.
But I couldn't remember, was that like something real or is that just like a legal, like because this console's so old?
It was in the fine print and we made a big deal out of it because it was funny.
Yeah.
But I didn't do any follow-up journalism. So.
It's true.
Justin, can you get on that? Ask him the tough questions. Yeah. Slip in a question about Mega Man X2.
I will delegate that to Seth.
And how much did the Street Fighter 2 cost?
Here's what's going on. So this is a really cool set. It comes with like all this stuff and it's really pretty. It's embossed. It has kind of like a little fold out poster. And then the cartridge just plays in a Super Nintendo, right? That's really neat that exists. This was $100 and it was about 20 to ship, so it was like 120 total. That's what these games are too. So the NES one and the Super NES one are both $100 for Mega Man X and for Mega Man 2, which are the new releases. Now, what concerns me is that you can get this for about $80 on eBay right now, like sealed. Mm-hmm. So it like lost value right away. So like as a collector's item, that's not great, right? Yeah. So like just be aware of that. But it also is a playable brand new Street Fighter 2 cartridge, which is a cool novelty if you are collecting and you want a full collection. This is an official release that you need to have if you're completing a Super Nintendo collection. So that's cool.
That's a good point, too. If someone, because that's a thing, like I have every SNES game, and if you want it, like now, if there's new ones coming out,
You got to pick them up, especially if they're made by Capcom, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's like a big deal. So this is that's important. And then the new games out of both those, this is like Street Fighter 2, you can get in the box for probably under $20. But I looked up Mega Man 2. If you just wanted to buy Mega Man 2, like a nice copy in box, like you would have bought it in 1988, it's under $60. And then Mega Man X is under $40. So, and that's for like, those are the sold prices on eBay. Like people bought them for that much. So that's what the going rate is for the classics one. So what you're buying is, an intentional collector's item that looks really cool. Like the new cartridges look really nice, but just be aware that, I think that those prices are pretty high, and I didn't initially, and now I do. Now I'm thinking like, oh, maybe that's like the barrier to entry for me to go in on buying a second copy of Mega Man 2 in box and stuff. It's not
Mega Man 2 for $60. That means it's a little rare, huh?
Yeah,
that's pretty
well,
high.
Well, no, it's the box. So in the U.S., any NES boxes add add to the value of a game.
Interesting.
Because kids here throw away their boxes. Yeah. In Japan, it's different. Everybody saved their boxes. So when you go to like a used game store there, all the Famicom games are like so neatly organized in their boxes. And
I saved mine through my whole childhood and gave up and threw them all out.
Yeah. Did you personally throw them away or did they just get lost in the shuffle?
No, I mean, I think I have a vague memory of being like 16 or 17 and being like, what am I doing with all these? And then just getting, you know, giving up.
After, yeah, that's like a really common story.
Well, it's funny that you have to make the decision to keep them every single time you see them, but you only have to make the decision to throw them away once.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My dad threw mine away. Ooh. Well, not SNES, but I had all my 64, like, are those still cartridges?
Yeah.
All those cartridges?
Yeah.
Cartridges. They were all in this nice bin because I threw out all of the boxes. And I came home from school one day and was like, hey, Dad, I'm going to grab my GameCube and my 64. And he was like, they're in the trash. And
oh,
I was
no.
Like, no.
It was a huge bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom threw away my Magic the Gathering cards when I went off to college.
Those are worth money.
I never forgave her. That's not true.
You're going to go home to see her tonight. And just like,
I had a similar off to college thing where like all my games from childhood were given away to somebody. I don't know how.
Kids, if you are going off to college,
you need to
have that conversation with your parents. Say, look, this is the stuff you can't get rid of. You have to just store this in your closet for a while. This is the stuff I don't care about. Don't assume your parents will just keep your stuff around.
You'll come home disappointed.
Yeah. But when I was a kid, I inherited other people's cool stuff. Like I remember some kid, I got all of his Star Wars toys, like really amazing ones, like the Millennium Falcon and like all this stuff in like 1983 or something. It was amazing. It was like the best thing ever. I got just boxes and boxes, and I bet he was just like crying somewhere when he found that out. That was
a nice life cycle. That's
just
nice.
Like Toy Story.
Yeah.
Just like Toy Story 3.
That's like the saddest thing ever, though.
Yeah, it is pretty sad.
I had a lot in that movie.
So $100 for 30-year-old NES and SNES games. Is that just the cost of manufacturing this hardware today?
Yeah.
Like we know it's not, though, because there's all the other ones that are cheaper. But I think it's that plus the license, maybe?
I don't know, man. Like, it's pretty, like...
It's expensive, for sure.
Stuff gets cheaper the more of it you do, right? So if there's 1,000 of these, it costs them more to make each one than if there's 5,000 of them or 10,000.
Yeah, I think it's like 8,000.
If it's the Data East collections are just cheaper. That's what's confusing to me. Mm. So those are like 65, 70 bucks.
Good point.
Mm. On a cartridge?
Yes.
Interesting.
Those ones that we've been playing, like the Joe and Matt collections.
But then, like I said, that license is far less valuable than Mega Man.
Yeah, right, but then these come with, again, like a printed manual, like like really nice like poster stuff.
This I don't understand license. Is it not Capcom making it?
It is.
So what's the
IM 8-bit.
It's 8-bit. IM 8-bit is the one that's actually, I think, doing the manufacturing.
So it's so they do have to buy that license from Capcom then.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was Capcom manufacturing them.
This one, you could get a, what we call in America, a fanny pack.
Hit pack?
They call them
Get out of here with hit pack. They call them
bum bags.
Well, who says hit pack?
I don't like any of this.
Both, well, I don't want to go into it.
Knapsack.
But those are, the fanny pack is a dirty thing, more dirty thing in the UK, so they think that's funny. So I think it's just, I don't know, they went with the neutral.
Hit pack.
Hit pack.
I don't think that, stop trying to make hit pack a thing.
Your price that you pay for this game, at least you get a free
hit cartridges.
Pack.
These new cartridges are cool but expensive. But the question is, since there are like so many, you know, there's third parties manufacturing like the Retron, ways to play these old cartridges, will we get to a point where companies are making new games for these old cartridges? Is there any world where Nintendo makes a new
SNES cartridge? Companies, you mean like the bigger companies?
Yeah, Nintendo,
like lots of homebrew.
Capcom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah.
That would be cool. The thing is, like, Nintendo could certainly make a new 16-bit style game and release it for download. And that's far less expensive for them than manufacturing the hardware, which is only going to appeal to a very small
Nintendo specifically. I mean, I don't know. No, probably not. But I think we'll see, you know, some notable company that's not like an indie homebrew company release a new, like we still, every couple of years, a new Dreamcast game comes out.
Or just Mega Man 11.
Really?
Right? Yeah. Like I think we'll see a new PS1 game, you know, come out on disc.
But Mega Man 11 isn't a Super Nintendo style game.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah. Mega Man 12 though
could be
a Super Nintendo cartridge.
9 or 10 could have been.
Yeah. I'm a crazy person with collecting, and I would absolutely be all in if I knew the code on the new cartridges was different. So if like Mega Man 2 had, I don't know, a Mario coin in it or something. Just something really stupid.
Just anything.
Just whatever. Mega Man was, you know, rainbow colored. Or they added a dinosaur to the Woodman level. I'm all in. But like as it stands, it's just because it's just the
same game.
Yeah.
But it is the cartridge is light blue now.
I know. That kills me a little bit.
What if Mega Man came with a hat? in the game.
But doesn't he already wear a hat?
He has a helmet. Start with me.
You can wear a hat over your helmet.
Yeah, he could put the old helmet hat, they call it.
There's an argument to be made that the whole head helmet component is just his robot head.
Yeah, that's just part of
it.
He does
take it off. I know that.
He takes it off,
all right?
And then
Don't at me.
Hair. He has hair underneath it.
But why do you pick up extra heads for extra lives with the helmet on?
That's true.
All right? Don't at me.
Everyone at him.
Yeah, you can at me. It's fine.
Sticking with the theme of rescuing some of these older games, Clark from Cleveland writes in, to say, first off, I want to start by saying that I can't believe my question is being read. Dreams do come true. You gotta dream bigger, Clarkland. I've been listening to the show since 2014 and it's become the highlight of my week. I was recently playing one of my favorite games, Brave Fencer Musashi. Yeah, everyone familiar with this game?
No.
Late 90s Squaresoft game that they wanted it to be their Legend of Zelda. It's like a top-down action-adventure game.
Say the name again?
It's actually pretty good. Brave Fencer Musashi.
PS1.
Like 98 issue.
Like On Guard?
He's a swordsman.
Square was doing all kinds of weird stuff back then.
Yeah, that's when they made like Einhander and doing experiments. Anyway, Brave Fencer Musashi.
That better not action be the 20 questions game.
And it's pretty good. Anyway, Clarkland says, I was struck by how much of a pain it is to play it. As it was never released on the PlayStation Store, I have to drag out my original copy and hook up my PS3.
Yeah.
I am extra concerned as there still has been no word about Nintendo's Virtual Console. I was wondering if there are any games that you enjoy that are trapped on old consoles like Baten Kaitos. Anybody remember that one?
Yeah.
GameCube
game. And what might companies do to make it so they can always be enjoyed?
Yeah.
This is something that comes back up.
I feel like I bring it up on Scoop every once in a while.
Games that are trapped on old consoles.
I'm really fascinated by that just because you can assume that most big AAA popular games will probably get re-released or come back around. But then there's always exceptions to that rule. And I'm always like, it's hard to play games like Skies of Arcadia, I think, is an example we were talking about a few months ago, where it's on GameCube and Dreamcast, but like, that's it. Can't get it.
Yeah.
It may be on PC. I don't think it's on PC.
In Sydney, we've talked many times about how the Wii was like such a unique console. There's like all these games that were made for it that you just can't play any other way.
Yeah, today. You need the hardware.
Yeah, so it's interesting.
Well, and Nintendo has that problem. For some reason, like Nintendo was really representative of the NES and SNES years, but and even N64, like, yes, there's the Zelda games and the Mario games, they get like big reissues.
Yeah.
But like we were just talking about, what was the Kirby game called?
Crystal Shards.
Crystal Shards. Like there's no way that would get like a common reissue because like it's a little bit harder to emulate 64 than those other things, right? Those are kind of big games. And so like
those games were available on the Virtual Console though.
Yeah.
All of them.
Well, but some of them were, right?
It was just so few of them. You just don't get these big libraries of 64-bit and above games. And I think it's because there's this perceived value in them where it's like, oh, but if we held on to that, we might just be able to clean it up and release it by itself.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nintendo seems to be really, really precious with some of their games or not have any interest in bringing some of them back, whereas others come back over and over and over again. You know, we had the Zelda compilation disc on GameCube that had, you know, Ocarina and games on it. And that's a game that we keep seeing over and over again.
Sure.
But then other games, that's not the case.
Well, the Virtual Console was an incredible resource for revisiting gaming's past because it wasn't just Nintendo consoles, right? It was also Sega, even like TurboGrafx-16.
That's
like
the only way
pretty,
I played, like Bonk. And
pretty obscure stuff, which I really appreciate. So I can only hope that whatever Nintendo's solution is for the Switch is going to sort of bring that back.
In the case of the Wii specifically, something like Zelda Skyward Sword that really relied on motion controls, it's hard to imagine how that will come back. Even if there was the will and desire.
Do it with the Joy-Cons, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right?
For now, but again, I'm taking like the long view. Like we're going to be playing Zelda 2 for decades, but like certain games that were really motion control heavy feel like they're kind of going to be lost to the sands of time.
Yeah, well, and I think that brings up a really good point of just a more general question of like, what happens to games you love? Like how do you show later generations?
Don't leave them with your parents.
That's the answer. Don't leave it. Put them in a box that says do not give away.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting because even, you know, going back, the example that I always bring up is like Halo, because I love Halo. And like I would love for if I have children to experience that. But also just the experience is so different because their bar of what an enjoyable game is so different than it was back then. Mm-hmm. So like how are
games...
Even
if you get it running, like it's like, is this actually
fun? Is this fun? Like I don't know.
Yeah. It should be. Games should be able to stand the test of time, like Mario 64 or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's still a 3D game, and like it works. I think the Halo campaign is still fun. I played it recently.
Yeah.
Halo 1?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know that one where you could switch back and forth and the collector's edition? Yeah. CE, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
Combat Evolved.
Mm-hmm. No, sorry. Oh. What was the collector's edition called?
Yeah.
The
Master Chief Collection?
Oh, Master Chief Collection. Yeah. MCC, yeah.
That's really impressive that you can switch back and forth between those. Yeah, it's cool. So many games that if the topic is like locked on old systems, like there's a lot of reasons for that. And the one really worrying thing is that even hooking up old consoles to contemporary TVs mm-hmm. is becoming really difficult.
Yep.
So even if you have the console and you can run the old cartridges, we're like this close to like coaxial cable connections, like the white wire you put in the back of your TV for cable. Like those aren't going to be around forever. And that's the last way you have to hook up an Atari. They don't have AV cables.
Yep.
You know, you have to have an RF switch for them. And like, it's really confusing. But
there's a new Atari coming out.
There's a new Atari coming out. Yeah.
I need to think about, what is it, Clark, I think, asking?
Clark Lind.
To his original question of like games that are trapped. Like, it's hard. Like, I need to research. Like, I'm kind of running through some in my head. Like, I don't think 1080p snowboarding on the N64 ever came back around on Virtual Console, but like, maybe it did. Like, I would need to kind of look it up, but I'm definitely interested in writing about that as a feature on IGN.
Yeah. Aladdin for Genesis.
Yeah. All those Disney games are never coming back. I mean, a few of them did.
There was the those are more afternoon like licensing collection issues. Like broke my mind mm-hmm. when that was possible to get DuckTales in that collection.
Yeah, like
and
the
stuff.
Konami TMNT really games, cool. like when a company loses a license and the game goes
exactly.
away.
Yeah.
Those ones are really tough.
So many games do get re-released, even obscure stuff today, but I'm finding like they tend to be really expensive. Like there's all these Neo Geo, like really weird Neo Geo games being released every week.
You've been going down the rabbit hole with those.
Yeah, but they're like $8 a piece and like most people aren't even going to bother. Yeah. You know, they're like really interesting games from like the 90s. And then like this random Japanese shooter, this arcade shooter called Dangun Feveron, which I thought I was the only person in the world who remembered. It's like really weird top-down shooter from the year like 2000, 1999. It just got a re-release on PS4, but it's $30.
You buy it?
For this. No, it's like crazy. It's like crazy
a downloadable
expensive.
Old game is $30.
A downloadable old game that should cost 50 cents in a Japanese arcade today. It costs $30 to download. It's crazy. So they need to sort that out.
But they're probably assuming anyone that would spend $10 on it will spend $30.
It's really interesting.
They couldn't get me. And I'm like the demographic this game. And they couldn't get me to spend $30 on it.
Maybe it's because not that they don't project many people are going to. So they're like, oh, well, we'll just charge a little bit more.
But at $30, they're not going to sell any copies, right? Like, who bought that game? I want to know. Did any of our listeners buy Dangun Feveron on PS4? Let me know.
Mm-hmm. And then you bring it over so we can try it.
Yeah, and then bring it over to my house. And then, Sam, the other game preservation issue that concerns me is arcade games, because so many of those don't... We're talking about console games being released for the most part. Mm-hmm. There's thousands of arcade games that are just arcade games, never got ported to console.
Even if licensing is tough, it's also like those games are on a game board, right? Yeah. Like a giant, circuit board.
Often bespoke, like...
That you have to hook up like a specific controller to, like Tron or Atari Star Wars, two of the best games ever made. Like, use insane controllers. And like, if you're going to play those on a console, it doesn't even work.
Yeah.
That's not even the right way to play them. And then also, like, those two are good examples, too, because one of those has a horizontal monitor, which is very common in arcade machines. Yep. And none of our TVs are horizontal. Vertical. I'm saying it the wrong way.
Yep.
It's a vertical monitor. So it's like your regular old TV, but it's on its side, right? And then the Star Wars game is on a vector monitor, which isn't even really a television. It's like a box of math and magic that's like drawing a laser, looking thing on the screen. It looks incredible, but you're never going to get that on television. It just doesn't look like that. That's not what televisions do. So there's just no way to present those games except for they're in their original formats.
Yeah.
There's the experiential aspect of it. And also a lot of people like the NES was so popular and that's what we've been playing for years and years. Like when I'm picturing Donkey Kong in my mind, it's not the arcade version. It's the NES version, which that game may actually be very, very close. But there's other games that were not that
close. No, it's not. It's missing an entire level.
The home one?
Yeah. Well, there's no excuse for that.
The sound is totally different.
Have the Pi Factory.
Maybe I am. I'm picturing the Pi Factory then, so I don't know. Maybe I am picturing the arcade version.
You could have played it in some other variation.
But a better example.
A casualty of the horizontal vertical issue.
An equally good example, I should say, is like Double Dragon on NES is very, very different than the arcade game. But I think that's the one that like people picture.
And that's not even two players. That's insane.
The original Double Dragon, one player, and the only enemies that can be on screen are two clones.
Two enemies
at a time. One solution for the vertical monitor issue is the Switch. in portable mode.
Yeah, you actually have an arcade game
yeah.
that you play on its side, right?
Yeah, I played Dragon Blaze, which was another obscure Japanese shooter that you can just tip up the Switch and then detach the Joy-Con to play it that way. And the upcoming Ikaruga shooter is also going to contain that mode, which is coming out this month.
The smartest PC ports of arcade games like that support, you know, running the game sideways because you're going to turn your monitor on your side. On its side.
There was That's cool. PSP game, Madden, one of the Maddens that there was a mini game and you had flip it and play it vertically.
What was the mini? Like, what were you? Was it like field goals? Or something?
It was like third person behind the running back shoulder and you would be running and then you'd have to like press X to like juke and you'd see how many defenders you could get past.
Weird.
And then there was a Ninja Gaiden game and Brain Age on the DS, the original DS, which you turn it and used it. They called it like Notebook.
Hotel Dusk was played that way too.
Hotel Dusk also?
Yeah, there's a few games that are played that way.
That's really cute. I like it when portable systems can work two ways. Like,
yeah,
that's really
cool.
One more word on arcade games that have unique control schemes. Nintendo made an arm wrestling arcade game that's just like Punch-Out, where it's like every arm wrestler you fight is totally unique. And I don't think very many people even know about that
game. You know, the very first Street Fighter game had a pressure sensitive.
Yeah, like, that's what I was just going to say.
What?
And there's versions of Street Fighter 2 that have that. Like,
really?
Like you light, like, medium, heavy punch depends on how hard you punch down this like this plastic thing.
Yeah.
Wow, they should bring that to Evo.
Totally. So you're controlling and stuff, and then there's just like, you know, some meathead that's like, rah, 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 and like winning.
Yeah. Hulk smash.
And of course they just broke smash. All the time.
Yeah.
There's just no way to maintain that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. This is Marcelo from Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Wow. Cool.
It says, first time writing. I'm a long, long time listener of the show. It's because of IGN that I started my career in video games journalism. And after some years doing PR for some publishers, I'm now living abroad and working for EA in Madrid.
Nice.
I guess all those years reading IGN paid off. Anyway, just recently, I was at the Nintendo eShop on my Switch. And I saw, I'm at the Nintendo eShop. I saw a game called Don't Knock Twice on sale, and since I'm a fan of horror games, I started researching it. But the lack of video reviews made me watch a gameplay of a famous Brazilian YouTuber playing it, something I don't usually do because it takes out the surprise of a game. In his gameplay, I could see that the game wasn't very good, and it had a hilariously bad localization for Brazilian Portuguese, which made me watch it through to the end. After finish, I was glad I didn't buy a bad and unpolished game, and now I've started watching other gameplays of this same indie horror genre just to see if they're worth it or not. I would like to ask your opinion about this. Have you guys ever considered or watched someone play any recent game that you had doubts about buying? And if so, did it end up saving you money or your time?
Hmm.
Do you check out gameplay?
I mean, I feel like that's our entire life, is that we walk past somebody's desk and be like, what's this like?
That's true.
So it's just, I'm not trying to be smug about it. Like, it means a lot to us to be able to see games early and make that decision. Well, that's what our job is present that to you to make that decision.
A little bit of a special case, just the four of us in particular, because of the job that we do, it's the same thing Sam just said.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to disagree to a certain extent. I think certain games, I will just get it in my head before I see any gameplay, like, well, I'm purchasing that.
Oh, yeah,
and
of course,
it doesn't matter. Like, I'll see gameplay, I'll be like, oh, they just showed a bad part. Like, they just chose a bad part to show. I don't know. And I'll get it anyways.
Yeah.
So,
well,
how
often are you satisfied? So, like, how good is your intuition?
Maybe it's a 50-50. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. I would say I do it with indie games more than like AAA games, because AAA games you see a lot before they're out. But if we get a press release about an indie game and it's just an email and it sounds interesting, I'll check out some gameplay of it.
I always scrub through anytime. If you're a game developer making a trailer for an indie game, the very first thing I do is go one third of the way through your trailer until
the
gameplay starts.
30 seconds to get to the gameplay, and
there's the title card,
huge pet peeve of me.
The swelling of music.
Yeah, there's a title like "In a World" or like
"Don't Need It."
Yeah, no, just cut right to your gameplay.
Particularly if you're making like an indie Switch game or PC game or whatever, like all I want. Yeah, I guess it's true. Like, now that I think about it more, I want to make my judgment based off of 25 seconds of gameplay, whether I'm interested in seeing more. That's like the first impression that I'm hunting for.
We notice, this is a little behind the scenesy, but when we have an indie game that has a striking graphic style that just looks like nothing else, like just like that the Goose game.
Goose game?
Yeah. When it has like something like that, when we we notice like people watch those like crazy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's not a big game. It's like, it's this eye catching nature of like, I've never seen that before. And it looks cute or it looks colorful or something. Like, people watch those a lot.
Or
that's a pro tip if you're making a game.
Or Beyonce Two Souls.
Yes. Sure. And there's also Beyonce Two Souls. Yeah. Check it out on IGN.com this week. We have some pretty exclusive footage of the actual game, Beyonce Two Souls. Is actual too strong of a word for that?
Well, it is a thing that we have.
It's playable.
Yeah.
Unclear.
Yeah.
It's actual.
It's
actual. All right.
Your art, particularly if you're making an indie game, is marketing. Maybe more so than it is. Like, whether that's fair or unfair, like, you'd have the coolest idea and like the most clever gameplay loop or whatever, but to cut through the noise of like the 20 games that come out on Steam every day, you have to be doing something striking and unique with your visuals.
That's, really well put. I think that's an interesting way to look at it.
It is kind of a minefield though, because like, you could pick a pixel art style and that immediately will appeal to me. I'm like, cool, that looks great. But then there's this whole other segment of gamers that are like, that looks old and lame. I'm not interested. So it's like, you're like locked into something that's going to appeal to some people and not to others.
But to play devil's advocate, I would argue that it's becoming like another side of the marketing is is it streamable? And like, are YouTubers going to pick it up? And are they like, I'm thinking of Dream Daddy while I'm saying this, that like, I mean, the art, like, it was a pretty game.
Yeah, for sure.
But obviously it took off because it was a hilarious game and all these YouTubers were playing it. Mm-hmm. And then that got me to buy it and play it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, a game being streamable. And that's where I thought this question was going, actually, was, well, I watched this game being played and I didn't need to play it anymore. And that's like really harmful to like single player only games, like a story heavy single player game. Like, if a game's 6 hours long and someone's like, here's the game, 6 hours of it, and you watch it and don't need to play the game, that's like really harmful to the game developer's business.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
Especially if it's somebody you like watching anyway, and they're just going to tear through it. Like the Game of Thrones Telltale game, like, there's a lot of reasons you'd want to watch that. It's like, it's canonical HBO content for that series, but
yeah,
like,
that's crazy.
It's a lot to, pay for and play. So I'm sure a lot of people watched it. Mm-hmm. I played it.
That's like that point. That's the point where I pulled my parachute on Telltale Games.
Yep. You and everyone else.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will play Video Game 20 Questions. Attention, dudes. Unfortunately, most men will experience hair loss by age 35. By the time you notice, it's usually too late. A preemptive strike is required. And that is where 4hims.com comes in. 4hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and men's health that connects you with real doctors for medical-grade solutions for problems that can be embarrassing to handle in person. There's no waiting room, no doctor visits, but these are prescription solutions backed by actual science. So you visit 4hims.com, answer a few questions, a real doctor will review and prescribe accordingly, and products are shipped directly to your door. While supplies last, GameScoop listeners can get a trial month for just $5 when they go to 4hims.com/GameScoop. That's FORHIMS.com/GameScoop. And now, back to the show. All right, it's time to play Video Game 20 Questions. We were just explaining this to Sydney before we started. Obviously, everyone knows how 20 questions works. And the item you were trying to guess this time is a video game. The suggestion comes from Jonathan Klimpa in Pensacola, Florida. And the one caveat to this is it's sudden death mode. So you need to be really sure of the game before you guess it, because if you guess the wrong game and you still have questions left, it's game over. Mm-hmm. So
are
with
we
that said,
working as a team.
Yes, you are all working as a team against Jonathan Klimpa of Pensacola, Florida. Let the questioning begin.
Yeah, we're working as a team, except with the caveat that I don't care if we win or lose. Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Do you have an AI companion?
If you do, it's not. It's maybe not during most of the game. Okay. If you do, it's just for a short period.
What?
What?
That's not like a main feature of the game, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But it's possible.
It's not Halo, guys.
Possible.
Or Iron Man game, I guess.
Did this come out after the year 2000?
Yes.
I had a good one, and I feel like I just lost it.
Sounds like a sci-fi genre, though. That's good to know.
Well, why?
Hey, how did you get that?
Because you have an AI friend?
No, you don't.
He said you don't.
You could during some of the game.
Well, I was assuming she just meant like an NPC.
Oh. Like an NPC partner sort of a thing.
Yeah, not like a computer.
Oh, I thought you meant like a projection of a hive mind or something.
I don't know, man.
you want to
is this
the game?
Is this a multi-platform game?
Yes.
Was it multi-platform upon release, or was it ported to other platforms? Oh, wait, was it was it multi-platform on release?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I like that clarifying question.
That's good. Was this from after 2010?
No.
We have a date range.
Mm-hmm. Was this on the PS3 and Xbox 360 and Wii generation of consoles?
Yes.
Did it have a Wii version?
No.
Okay. That's good.
Xbox
good
to know. 360.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah.
Does it have guns?
Yes.
Ample guns. Is this part of a series?
No.
Whoa. Sounds like it's black. Finally.
That's 10.
It could be. It could be. No, that was PS2, I think, wasn't it? Was this game made in Japan?
No.
I'm losing track of the questions that we asked.
So it has guns.
It's a multi-platform PS3 and 360 game. Yeah. Not made in Japan. You play as a person.
Is there? Do we ask about multiplayer?
No, we haven't.
Is there a multiplayer component?
No.
Single player game.
Should we find out if it's a first-person shooter?
Yeah, is it an FPS?
No.
But it does have guns. Mm-hmm. That's not a question.
I know.
No.
Okay.
And it doesn't have multiplayer.
I was for some reason picturing first-person shooter when we talked about all this gun stuff.
Well, yeah, not for some reason. I mean, for a big reason.
Is this a digital release?
Like what is it?
Like a downloadable
release. No.
It's on disc, huh? Could it be Bionic Commando Rearmed? No, that's part of a series. Not Rearmed, I mean the other one.
Huh.
It's a standalone.
Mm-hmm.
Single player.
Was this well received critically?
Moderately.
Not part of a series trips me up. PNO3 matches everything he said so far, except it was a GameCube exclusive at launch. So it's too old.
It has guns in it? You dance with guns?
Well, I don't know. She might be firing some sort of energy something, but it's basically a gun game. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to picture like third-person shooters.
We're at 15. There are 5 questions left.
Whoa, that was really fast.
Yeah.
Let's get some questions.
Does it have a realistic art style?
Yes.
Not part of a series is tripping me up, too. Because I'm like, I don't know, Gears of War?
Should we burn one on the license? I think it might be a licensed game.
Is it a licensed game?
No.
All right, we got one question. Two questions we can
two
ask,
questions.
And the pinky finger we have to guess.
Okay.
We have enough information though here. Probably.
Did you hear Sam's question about what did you ask? I think Justin was speaking over you.
Critically well received.
Yeah, said it was moderately well received.
Yeah, that's not helpful to me.
So you got these guns. You're playing by yourself.
So it could be like an open world game.
Yeah,
like
it could be.
It can't be GTA or Driver because they're part of a series, but yeah.
Some knockoff of one of those, like Destroy All Humans, like that kind of thing.
Something like that, although we failed on that one the other week.
Yeah, so maybe open worldy or even a brawler or something. Those were uncommon in that era.
Is it an open world game?
Yes.
Okay. What was so Prototype got a sequel, but what was an Infamous? Those both have franchises.
Yeah, so the
360 generation like open world games.
Crackdown.
Not a license.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, I don't know, like there was an Incredible Hulk open world game and some other weird
stuff.
Yeah,
totally.
But not one of those. An open world game that didn't get any sequels, that was moderately well received.
Was there like a Saints Row knockoff at the time?
I mean, Saints Row was a knockoff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Knockoff of a knockoff.
There's the Rockstar games like Bully, which were like...
There was Bully. I don't think there's guns in Bully, but I think you're on the right track.
What else? Jeez, what else?
There's a slingshot.
Yeah. What about like Sleeping Dogs type games?
Sleeping Dogs was published by Square Enix, so who developed it?
It has to be a Japanese game, right?
I don't know. I don't recall.
But aren't there sequels?
No. Well, they did that weird sort of pseudo sequel. I don't know if Damon would have counted that
as
being part of a series. They did that weird something that I don't even know if it came out. It might have been canceled.
Was that even the right generation?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
It is?
That was last gen.
So that's an interesting one.
Well, now I want to figure out, you play as a police officer in that game.
Oh, right? There's Mafia. There's The Godfather that was licensed.
The Godfather was licensed. I like that game, actually.
Did this have to do with organized crime? I mean, I'm trying to do Sleeping Dogs for that.
Yeah, or I was going to ask, I think you play as a cop, and I was going to ask if you play as a cop. But then if you don't, then
but I don't know if you play as a cop.
Is organized crime one of the themes of this game? If Sam and I are operating under the assumption that Sleeping Dogs does.
No, it's not based on organized crime.
Just unorganized crime.
Yeah.
Disorganized crime.
Just mayhem.
Yeah,
general mayhem.
That's a good name for a game.
Yeah,
I don't think the villains or the protagonists in this game would be considered to be a part of organized crime.
So it's not sleeping dogs.
So it's not like a GTA thing. Probably it's more like probably Prototype.
Yeah. I wish we would have zeroed in
the last
on
five questions. Yeah. So
what if we all played it though? Then it'll feel bad.
I wish we would have zeroed in on like whether it was like sci-fi themed or more realistic or like.
Well, he said it was. Oh, well, it was realistic art style.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
We have two questions?
No, this is it.
You gotta make your guess.
We gotta guess the game now.
Not licensed open world game. Not made in Japan. 360 PS3 generation.
Not multiplayer.
No multiplayer.
Not made in Japan.
There are guns.
We should have zeroed in more on that. Probably.
Didn't get a sequel. What's our guess? I can reveal it for you.
I'm always just think of the strategy guides from that era because I know we would have done one for this big open world game, and then I think about who did what.
I usually just think of nothing at all. I just don't have any. My mind just goes blank.
Really pops out because I remember it so well.
It's a great game too.
And then other ones would Darksiders. It's another one.
Got a sequel eventually.
Yeah, totally.
Shall I reveal it?
Yeah.
Published by EA, developed by the now defunct Pandemic. Are we there yet? Set in World War II.
No, I don't have it.
The Saboteur.
Oh, The Saboteur. That game was really cool.
The Saboteur.
That was the one that was all black and white, and then you would there would be like splashes of color, right? Or you would bring color back into the world.
Yeah,
or something.
There was definitely that was, a didn't color have mechanic some too, weird. Yeah.
I've never heard of that game.
I was gonna say I have no recollection of this. I was probably playing
published
Halo,
by
EA.
So. It's that was like their open world game set in World War II, where you're going to be taking down the Nazis.
The Saboteur was neat.
Yeah, I think it was well received, but it just didn't sell well enough to get a sequel. And then Pandemic went out of business.
The way your character climbed in that game was weird.
Yeah,
that's my only like. Look up the climbing animation. It was odd.
That's we were like stumped.
Early.
Well done.
As the game came out during early on in my career here at IGN. But thank you for the suggestion. Jonathan Klimpa from Pensacola, Florida. Do you want to bring this out? We were just talking about this.
You just got this
it's
in the mail.
Real.
You got it in the mail.
We got it. You thought, in case you didn't think we were telling the truth, this is Beyonce Two Souls. This is the box for Beyonce Two Souls here.
The truth hurts, everybody.
As you can see from the cover here, it's really something special. And I urge you to go look at the gameplay videos that we have on IGN.com right now because it's...
It works on Mac?
It is something else. Actually, there's a message on the back from someone named Chris.
It says, first of all, it says, one Beyonce, two souls, one ring to rule them all. It says all that.
Should I put a,
all right,
put a ring on it?
I'm going to read this.
Okay.
But if there's swears, you're going to have to bleep them.
Okay.
The software contained within this package is provided as is. It's not going to do anything bad to you. We make no legal promises. Our lawyers left before we could ask them any real questions, so we can't make any promises or guarantees about anything, really. This game is probably okay for us to give away to people, but if we aren't, then you aren't allowed to play it because that's against the law. If you are legally allowed to play it, go for it. If you are not legally allowed to use the software, then please destroy it immediately. The software makes no official promises and has no official licenses, so do whatever you want with that info. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Chris. And we recorded the gameplay from this on a USB stick.
You realize that 100% our network is just infected with malware now, right? Like,
so we have a strong firewall. I'm sure we'll be fine.
I will say it has a great ending.
I saw the net.
Involving waffles.
Well, I would ask everyone what we're playing this weekend, but I'm sure we're all going to be playing Beyonce Two Souls.
Yep.
So mystery solved there.
I am free from, I don't know what to do with myself because I've been rewatching all 19 Marvel movies.
Did you watch them all?
Yeah, I watched them all. And now it's like, I feel like I'm emerging from like a fugue state. Like,
but you
I don't
didn't
know.
Watch Infinity War, so you have
no,
to
I did. I watched it Sunday.
Oh, okay.
You waited until Sunday?
Yeah.
Did you go in spoiler free though?
Yeah, okay. This office was a real minefield on Friday. But yeah, then once you make it to the weekend, it's easy.
Yeah. I went last night.
And you liked it?
Yeah.
Is Guardians still your favorite though, Justin?
Guardians is my favorite, okay. Followed by Avengers 1.
Sydney, what's your favorite?
I don't know. Infinity War is up there. Yeah, I'm having a hard time saying that it is my favorite just because it feels kind of, I don't
very
know.
New.
Yeah, fresh. It has to sit. But right now, I feel like it might be Infinity War. I liked
it has the best jokes.
I liked it a lot. Yeah.
I liked Infinity War a lot too. But I also really liked Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
That's my second too. To yeah.
Ragnarok's my number one.
Ragnarok's really good.
So good.
I really liked it. Yeah. I was surprised. It's really fun.
All right, that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Sydney, we're so glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Hopefully,
for having me.
The first of many scoops to come. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sydney. Thank you, Sam. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.